Let's just go over quickly the Gemara on Daf Tes Amud Beis, so we'll be able to focus on the sugya here on Daf Yud. If you're counting up from the bottom, it's about 10 lines up. Shnei batim, echad baduk v'echad she'eno baduk. Now this is the case of what we called yesterday tfliya. And what we're going to assume is that the achbar that had matzah went into the house that was
baduk.
Well, just one second. That was baduk, and then the achbar that has chametz into it went into the house that's eino baduk. This not because we have a mishnah shtei kupos achas shel chulin v'achas shel truma. So the Gemara is now going to equate Bedikas Chometz with the case of Shtei Kupos. Now, what we're trying to say is that we have a 50-50 chance. We don't know whether the Chulin went into Chulin and the Truma into Truma. Or perhaps the opposite, that maybe the chulin went into the truma, which is not a problem per se, but the truma therefore went into the chulin. Now Rashi points out that if the truma went into the chulin, then it assers the entire mixture. And why is that so? Because Rashi says on the first of the wide lines at the bottom, that's four lines up before the end of the page, he says, afilu Ein bekupa kidei lahalos hasa'a bi'echad u'me'a. So it means that when the truma falls into the chulim, which again, that's not going to be the case according to the assumption of the Mishnah, but if we were, and again, there's a 50% chance that it went in, the truma went into the chulim, then we don't have a ratio of 100 in the chulim against the truma, and therefore everything becomes asur. And Tliya tells me that I can assume that the Truma went into the Truma, not into the Chulin. And therefore the Chulin, the Kupa Shel Chulin, remains Mutter. Now Tosus points out over here that this Sugya, which equates Chametz and Bedika on the one hand with the Kupa of Truma and Chulin on the other hand, is against Reish Lakish. Where is Reish Lakish? He's in the Gemara in Yevamos. And he claims, Reish Lakish, that this Mishnah, which says that you're allowed to eat the contents of the Kupa Shel Chulin, is not based on a 50-50 statistical Shava B'Shava situation, but rather, and this you'll see the next to the last line on the page in Tosus, if you want to underline, Kisha Rabu Chulin ala Truma, that there's more Chulin than there is Truma. Now, again, if there's more Chulin than there's Truma, Rashi says that doesn't do it for me because I need a ratio of 1 to 100. Right? Lahalos be Echad Umeya, meaning 1 versus 100. And here, Reish Lakish says, all I need is Rov Chulin. There was more Chulin in the Kupa Shel Chulin than the amount of Truma that Sov Truma that fell in and might have indeed fallen into the Kupa Shel Chulin. Now, exactly what Reish Lakish gains by Rov is, let's assume he reduces it from a Doraisa to a Drabonon, meaning the Torah itself relies on Rov. So if I have an added mixture of 51 chulin and 49 truma, I'm allowed to eat it. I'm a zar, I'm not a kohen, I can eat it because the Torah says we rely on rov. On the other hand, the Rabbanan said we're not going to rely on rov. We're going to jack up the requirement. The ratio has to be 100 to 1. And Reish Lakish is basically saying that since in the worst case scenario, even if I were to assume that the Truma fell into the Chulin, since there's Rov Chulin, then there's no Issa Doraisa because the Torah relies on Rov. And it's only an Issa Derabbanan. So Tosa says, Hach sugya, three lines up from the bottom, demidame, that equates bedikas chomes l'shtei kupos, lo asi kireish lakish. This is against Reish Lakish. Now, let's assume, like the Ri, back on Daf Tes Amud Aleph, that our sugya is talking about a case where there was no bittul. Right? Let me just review that for 1 second here.
Yeah.
Omer Ri, Demasnisen Ayri, I'm just quoting you one line out of, you know, pulling a rabbit out of the hat here. Demasnisen Ayri b'shalo bitlo. So if we're talking about a case where there's no bittul, then we have a serious problem with Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. If the achbar that's carrying chametz went into the house that was baduk, and you're not going to do a repeat bedika, then you have a problem on a doraisa level of Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. Reish Lakish says that when the Mishnah permits the kupa shel chulin, it's based on the fact that there is no doraisa, that it's only derabbanan. And the operation of tliya, in which we match up the chulin with the chulin and the truma with the truma, only applies in a case of a derabbanan. That's not going to help us for bedikas chametz. So therefore Tosus concludes that our sugya reflects not the shita of Reish Lakish, but the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is not talking about a rov. Now, let's just think for a moment about this concept of rov. Let's say I have in front of me 51 chulin and truma falls in 49. So I have a rov chulin. What does that mean? I'm not a Kohen. Every time I take out a piece from this kupa, I have a right to assume it came from what? From the rov, from the chulin. Because the Torah says we rely on rov. There's only one problem, Rabbo said. What problem should you raise?
After you eat half of it.
Kol kavua kemetzal mechza dami. Why? Because you remember, if I go into the store and I don't know which store I went into, that's a suffix of kavua. Because I'm asking which chanus, and which chanus, since the stores are kvuim, the latest hasafik is b'makom kvius, then I apply the principle of kol kavua kemetzal mechza dami. And basically what I'm asking is, how does rov operate in a tarovis? Meaning, every time I have a mixture, I gave you the example that we're dealing with of chulin and truma, but you can give a million and one examples. Let's say if you have a mixture of non-kosher meat with kosher meat, etc., etc. Anytime the Torah tells me to rely on rov, what I'm doing is I'm taking something from a makom kvius, because the meat is here on the table, and I don't know if what I'm taking is kosher meat or non-kosher meat. That's called kol kavua kemetzal mechza dami. Basically, what I'm undermining is the entire operation of rov. So Tosis gives the following answer. Tosis says, in order to activate the principle of kavua, it's not enough to say that the suffix is nolad b'mokom kvius. What you need is nikar ha'iser b'mokomo. Which means that I have to be able to discern this chanus is selling kosher meat, this chanus here is selling non-kosher meat. So there's no mixture of the meats because the meat is separated. This is kosher meat, this is non-kosher meat, this is the chanus. So in that case, it's called ha'isur nikar bimkomo. So I know exactly the identity of the isur. I can point to it. Again, I don't remember which store I went into, but as far as the stores are concerned, they're clearly marked kosher and non-kosher. However, says Tosfos, the very moment I have a mixture, and I no longer am able to identify which is the isur, which is the heter, then I apply a different principle, not the principle of kavua, but the principle called bittul b'rov. And bittul b'rov means that the rov now, what word can I use? It overcomes, it pulverizes, I don't know, I'm looking for a word here which I'm not finding, the mute.
Absorbs.
It absorbs, okay, I don't know. Anyway, it vitiates the mute. So now we have a battle here between the rov and the mute, and the rov defeats the mute. And that's called bittul. So you'll ask me, but how can I apply the principle of bittul? Because this is not called the parsh meruva parsh. I'm actually putting my hand into the tarovus. I'm taking something out, and that's makom kavius. I should apply the principle of kol kavua kemetz al metz. And the answer is that bittul completely nullifies kol kavua kemetz al metz adomi, because in the case of bittul, I don't and I cannot apply the principle of kavua because it's ein ha'isur nikar bimkom. All right. So the Gemara doesn't like this equation. Amar Damrina, when do we say that we can assume that the chulin fell into the chulin, the truma into the truma? Shani Omer. And now we're on Daf Yunamun Aleph. Truma Derabbana. That's only because in our time it's truma Derabbana. Now again, the assumption of the Gemara is, and that's what we saw in this Tosfos here on Daf Tesamid Beis, that we're dealing with Bedikas Chometz without Bittul. If there was no Bittul, then what kind of Iser would be involved if he doesn't do a Bedikas Chometz in his house? Doraisa. If that be the case, then you can't prove anything from the Mishnah of Tlia, Shtei Kupos, because that Mishnah is talking about Truma Bizman Hazeh, and Truma Bizman Hazeh is only Derabbanan. But Eino Chinami, if there were Doraisa and we have a 50-50 situation where maybe the Chulin was attacked by Truma, maybe the Truma fell into the Chulin and the Truma is Doraisa, let's say Bizman, Shei Yoshvel Leo, whatever it might be, in such a case, I would have to say Safik Lechumra, that maybe in fact the Truma fell into the Chulin. And therefore I can't eat that whole coop of Chulin. In the case of Bedika, where we're dealing with the Doraisa, because our premise is that he did not achieve Bittul. Here we're going to have to assume that the Achbar brought Chometz into a house that's Baduk, and if you don't repeat your Bedika, you're going to violate the Isa Doraisa of Bal Yorba Motzei. So Gemara answers, you're right. In a case where there was no Bittul, then we'd have to assume, And we have to worry about the possibility that the Achbar holding the Chometz went into the Bayis Baduk, and we're going to have to require another Bedika. But here we're talking about a whole different scenario, and that's where the Halacha allows for Tlia and the analogy to Shtei Kupos. Mi Amrinan Otu Bedikas Chometz Doraisa Derabbanani. The requirement of Bedika is Derabbanan, because on a Derabbanan level he's already protected from the violation of Bal Yorba Motzei the Midoraisa Bebitul Ba Masagi. So if you were a posek and you were formulating the rules of Psak in this particular case, you'd have to say the following. If you don't know whether or not Chometz went into the house that's Baduk, then it depends. If you did Bittul, and therefore you reduced the requirement of Bedika to a Drabbanon, then I could assume that what the Achbar is carrying is not Chometz, but rather it's Matzah. Because again, there's a 50% chance that the Achbar that went into the house is carrying Matzah. If on the other hand, you did not implement your Bittul, and therefore the Isur Bal Yorba Motzei, the requirement of Bedika is Doraisa, then if I have a 50-50 suffix as to whether or not the Achbar was carrying Chometz into the house or Matz into the house, I would certainly have to do the Bedika because of the Doraisa, the suffix Doraisa of Bal Yorba Motzei. That seems to be the final conclusion. I was curious to see if we could find this in the Rambam. Let's see what he says here. Hey, Perek Beis Halacha Yud Aleph. I'm going to have to, Steve, see if you can file this for a minute. What did I just say, Perek Beis? Okay, let's see if I can find this. Shnei Tziburim echad shel chametz ve'echad shel matzah u'shnei batim echad baduk ve'echad she'eino baduk bo shnei achbarim zenotol chametz ve'zenotol matzah ve'eino yedua li'eze bayis nichnas. In other words, the achbar that's holding on to chametz, because one of the two, but we don't know which house he went into. And in this case, we have a serious chashash that maybe the achbar that's holding on to the chametz went into the bayis baduk. So now, based on the equation of our Gemara, the Rambam should have made the following distinction. Did he do bittul, did he not? Assuming he did bittul, then you could be matir and you could exonerate the owner of the house who already did his bedikah from a chiyuv bedikah nosefes. And the Rambam says, Eino tzarech livdok pam shnia. He doesn't have to check a second time around. The only problem I have here in this Rambam is the Rambam should have qualified himself and he should have made the stipulation that he already did bittul. Is the Rambam assuming that he did bittul?
Does he hold bittul belayf saki? Doesn't the Rambam hold?
Ah, excellent. Maybe the Rambam holds that he was mevatel et belibo. And I have a support for that because the Rambam Hilchos Brachos says that you make the bracha al bir chametz because he already was mevatel lechametz before he did the bedika. So it means that the Rambam always assumes that whenever you're dealing with bedikas chametz, there's a built-in bittul. There's a premise of bittul. He doesn't want this chametz to exist. Let me just see for a second. You know, I'm using the Frankel edition of the Rambam. Are you familiar with that? One of the great features of the Frankel is the Sefer HaMaftech in the back. Now, again, to really use the Sefer HaMaftech properly, you have to have a massive library, because 90% of the books that he tells you to look at, unless you have a really fabulous library, you never even heard of these before. But the nice thing about the Sefer HaMaftech is that he has little kotarot on every halacha in which he indicates like what the problems in the Rambam are. So I'm just going to see for a second, Perek Beis Halacha Yud Aleph, if he mentions this problem. The only question is, where is it? Just one second. Perek Beis Halacha Yud Aleph. Yeah. So he just tells you Yishuv HaRambam. Tells you, look at the note to be Yehuda, to the Divrei Moshe, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He gives you a whole list of Svarim for Yishuv HaRambam, but unfortunately, he doesn't tell you exactly what the question is. So I guess we'd have to look in those Svarim to figure out backwards what was the question, the problem on the Rambam. Again, if it was me, I would say the Rambam's issue, the issue in the Rambam here is that he doesn't spell out that he did bittul, and therefore reducing bedika to a drabon. Alright, that's what I have here, and now we go on to today's sugya. So we're at the bottom of line, we're at the end of line 3 on Daf Yudom and Aleph. And this is the sugya called Shnei Shvilin. So the previous sugya was called Shtei Kupos, and this sugya is called Shnei Shvilin, which means two rows or two aisles. You know, very often if you want to get to a certain destination, there are two possibilities. Okay? Two roads that diverge in the yellow wood.
Ooh.
Right? You remember that?
Probably Frost.
And don't get chilly on me. Okay. So what I wanted to say is the following. The issue of Shnei Shvilin is the issue of Shtei Chazokos Hasosros Zu Ezu, which means the following. That Reuven comes forward with his Chazokah, Shimon comes forward with his, But there's a contradiction between the two. Because if you apply both chazakos, then you come to a conclusion which is untenable. What it means is that one of these two gentlemen became tamei. They both went down, each one a shvil, each one went down a road, and we know that there's a kever, there's a dead body that's buried on one of these two roads. One of the two is certainly tamei, therefore, because Reuven went down this road and Shimon on that road. We're not sure where the mess is, but it's definitely on one of these two roads. Now, if you can ask Reuven, did he go down to the road that has a kever on it? Well, he's going to say, I have a chazaka, I'm tahar, you can't make me tamei unless you can prove with certainty that I contracted tumah, and therefore my status has to remain status quo. And then Shimon comes forward and says the same thing. If we apply both Reuven's chazaka and Shimon's chazaka, we come to an impossible conclusion that neither of them are tamei. Because that's impossible. We know that there's a dead body that's buried on one of these two roads, and either Reuven went on that road or Shimon went on that road.
Amen.
Tzibur echad shel chametz. So you've got now only one pile, and it's got chametz in it. Lefan of shnei batim v'dukim. V'asa achbar v'shakav lo yadina ilahai oil, ilahai oil. So we have now the case of chametz that's going into one of two houses, and it definitely went into one of those two houses, but we don't know which of the two. Reuven's claiming, well, it didn't go into my house, I don't have to do another bedikah. Shimon's claiming the same. Now, on the one hand, each one has a pretty good claim. He did a bedikah, and unless you know that cheskas bodek was undermined and vitiated, then we assume that there was no chametz going in. But when you apply both the chazak on both Reuven's house and Shimon's house, you come to the conclusion that there's no chametz in either of the two houses, and we know that that's not true. The chametz definitely went into one of the two houses. Hainu, says the Gemara, the analogy here is to Shnei Shvilin, the two roads. Disnan, we have a Mishnah, and again, we're learning Mishnayos here in Taharos, in the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. Shnei Shvilin, Echad Tamei, V'Echad Tahar. We know that one of the two is Tamei. And if you take a look at Rashi, three lines down from the top, Rashi says, Kever mutal bo l'rochbo. Rashi says that the kever is situated in a horizontal position. If it's in a vertical position, going up and down, like north and south, then it could be that he never stepped on that particular, you know, strip of the shvil where the kever is. But if the kever is going l'rochbo, it covers the entire width, umemali eskulo, there's no way that he could have gotten by going down that road without being mahil alames. But we're not sure which of the two shvilin actually has the kever. And what happened now? Holach bi echad mehem vi osotaros. So Reuven went down one of them, and then he came in contact with taros. And again, if we're talking about taros, then usually taros refers to truma, and if truma contracts tuma, then there's an absolute iser that prohibits us from eating truma tmea. So we don't want truma to become tame. That's part of the reason why, back in the time of Shlomo Melch, they instituted the gzera of netilas yadayim. And now holach chavero, bo chavero v'holach b'sheni. So Shimon now goes down the second path, the Osataros, and Shimon likewise came in contact with Truma. Now what would you say should be the din in this case? Can we apply two chazakas that are basically mutually exclusive in a sense? Because if you apply both chazakas, you come to the ridiculous conclusion that neither Reuven became Tomei nor Shimon becomes Tomei. What would you say, Rabbo? So what would be your knee-jerk response?
Well,
If you were the Rav who had to paskin in this case.
They're both tar.
So one logic is to say they're both tummy. The other logic is to say they're both tar. But if you're going to say they're both tar, then what you have to do... Do you remember yesterday I was discussing with you the following case? You have one piece of trefa meat that falls into a mixture with two pieces of kosher meat. So you take out one piece and you assume it's kosher. You take out another piece, you assume it's kosher. And then you take out the third piece, you assume it's kosher. What's going on over here? What I mean to say is that the halacha could issue what's called a hora. Hora means that if a question is being raised, is being asked, a practical question, then the response to that question, the hora, is limited to that question. I don't have to go beyond that question. In other words, Reuven asks if he became tameh. Well, I'm going to be in a prediciment here because tomorrow Shimon is going to ask me the same question and he went down the other road. Do I have a right to, in Yiddish we have a phrase, to be dumb avat, you know, to make believe I'm dumb, and say, well, I'm dealing with Reuven. Don't hack me with Shimon. You know, one question at a time. They're waiting online, you know, to ask the question. Reuven's asking the question. He comes in with a cheskes tara. I can't prove that he was tameh. Maybe he went on the, you know, the clean road that was clean of any tumah. Therefore, I can paskin that he's tar. Yeah. Now Shimon gets his turn and he asks the question. So in the case of Reuven, I gave him a hora, and that hora was hora's tara based on the cheskes tara of Reuven, and there was no contradiction. When do I get involved in a contradiction? When I have to paskin for Shimon. But when I paskin for Shimon, do I have a right to say that my hora and Shimon is limited to Shimon? And as far as Shimon is concerned, Shimon has a cheskes tara. Now, when we calculate and combine the two horas, what we end up with is a contradiction, but each hora stands on its own. And that's what I think Rabbi Yehuda has in mind here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im nishalu zebifnei atzmo v'zebifnei atzmo, if each one came in front of the Chacham with his question individually, tahorin, then for each one I have a right, and indeed an obligation, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to paskin a hora that's relevant to that particular individual, and I don't go beyond that individual. However, shneim bevasachas, if both Reuven and Shimon came together as one, and therefore I have to paskin a hora for both of them, because they came as one, is therefore tmeim. I have to be metami both of them, as Steve said before, I can't choose one over the other, because each one has a 50% chance that he became tamei. Rabbi Yossi Omer, ben kach hu ben kach tmeim. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says that you cannot separate the hora, even if each one came separately, because the story itself, the Sipar Maisa, the Gufa di Uvda, as we would call it, integrates both Reuven and Shimon into the same suffix. There's one suffix for both of them, because the episode was that they both went down these two roads, I mean, respectively, and therefore the question is which one of them became Tomei. And if I know that one of them became Tomei, then the Cheskas Tuma, as far as both of them, as far as both of them as an entity, is totally invalid. I can't use the Cheskas Tara. I can only, because I know that there's a certain Tuma here. Again, the Tuma is in the episode, so to speak, in the Gufa di Uvda, in the story of the two together. So whereas Rabbi Yehuda puts the emphasis here on the Horas She'ela, meaning the Horas is defined halachically by the She'ela, Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says the hora is defined by the suffix itself. And the suffix itself now is on both of them. And if the suffix is on both of them, I have a vadei tuma, and I cannot rely and fall back on a cheskes tara. This is the way we would understand the Mishnah up until Rava. So let me ask you the following question. I don't know if the achbar that was holding on to chametz went into your house or into my house, what would be the deal as far as another bedika according to Rabbi Yehuda?
And so we have to
exactly. If you came in separately and you got your psak, and then I came in separately and I received my horos psak, then we can both be exonerated from a repeat bedika, applying the cheskas bedika that there's no chametz to each one, each house. If, on the other hand, says Rabbi Yehuda, that they came together as one, you and I decided, let's arm in arm go to the Rav and ask him what we should do. He has to now paskin for both of us. So the Rav is related to the incident in which the Achba went into one of these two houses, and it's impossible to apply Cheskas Bedika to both houses when there's certainty that that's not true, because we know one of the two houses has chametz in it. And therefore I'm going to have to, by you know, no choice of my own, I'm going to have to paskin that both have to do a repeat bedika. But according to Rabbi Yossi, who says no, it has nothing to do, and it's irrelevant to whether or not they came together to ask the shaila. The shaila itself is on both of them. The very mitzius, the facts and the reality of the case on the ground, are that the Akbar went into one of these two houses, so both houses are schlepped into the safek by virtue of the mitzius, by virtue of the reality of the safek. And therefore, I can't limit myself, you know, put my head into the sand and say, well, I'm only giving Orah for Reuven as a separate Orah, and then I'll give Orah for Shimon. No, there's one Safek, and the Safek is generated on both houses, and there's no possibility of applying a Chazakah. And this is all until Rava. Now, before we get to Rava, let's talk about two chidushim of Tosfos. One is in Dibra Maskel Holach, and the other chidush is in Dibra Maskel Bevasachas. Let's start with the second Tosfos and go backwards. Tosfos says that what it says here in Rabbi Yehuda, that if they came together as one to ask the Shaila, then we have to be metame both of them. That's all Durabana. Midaraisa, even if they came together as one, and again, I'm not sure if he's saying this even according to Rabbi Yossi, but certainly according to Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu b'vasachas tahorim. What it means is that there's a separate horah on Reuven and on Shimon, even if they came together. On a Doraisa level, the fact that they came together is not Machayev that we go back to the Guf of the Uv, to the original Safek, and Paskin on both of them. No. Even though they came together, there's a separate Horah for each Gavra, for each individual. He has to know, and we have to determine whether he's Tomei or he's Tar. And therefore, each individual comes with his own Cheskas Tahara. We can be Matara both of them, so that when Rabbi Yehuda makes this qualification and he says it depends whether they came together or not, he's worried about what it appears to the eyes of the spectator. Now, whenever you're worried about the spectator who comes to some mistaken conclusion, then are you dealing with the Doraisa or the Rabbanan, Rabosai? It's always the Rabbanan. Whenever you ask the question, well, what is he going to think when he hears the way I paskin, he's going to come to some mistaken conclusion, misimpression, that's a Rabbanan. So if they both came together, the onlooker, the spectator, gets word of this and he starts laughing. It's kichucha v'tlula, as the Gemara calls it. What kind of a halachic psak could there be that both Reuven and Shimon are both tar when they both went down the two shvilin, respectively, and there was tum in one of them? It's a ridiculous psak. If there was a psak of bezecher zeh, each one came separately, so then no one's going to get upset about that. You know, Reuven came in with his cheskes tara, and he got a psak tohar. That's called nishalu zeh b'fnei atzmo v'zeh b'fnei atzmo. But if they both come together, then midrabbanan were worried about the following. The people, you know, who are there in the courtroom, you know, the audience, their hair stands on end. How could this be? The judge issued a verdict that both Reuven and Shimon are tar? Come on. Who are you fooling? That can't be so. That's against the Metzius. The reality is that one of these two individuals is Tomei. Therefore, Tosus says that this whole fear, how can we paskin for both of them, that they're both tar, which entails a tarti de sasri, a contradiction in terms, that's all derabbanan. Because even when they came together, we have to separate the horah, because each one deserves his own horah, and each horah in and of itself stands alone. So like when I talked to you about the piece of meat that fell into the roe, each piece of meat stands on its own. So when I get to the second piece of meat, I have a right to say that I already ate the Iser, it was already removed. I'm not going to paskin on all three together at once. That's a big chiddush. That's Tosfos here. Tosfos says that when Rabbi Yehuda is machmir to be metami both of because shalu bevasachas, that's a derabbanan. Again, in pure halachic terms, the Torah would say they're both tar. Now, here at this point, in order to appreciate the first Tosfos, we have to ask the following question. Let's see if I can. There's something called Birur, and there's something called Kiyu. Can I open the window a little bit? Does anybody object? It, I don't know, I feel a little bit. Is that all right? If it gets too cold. It's not that cold today, so I think we're okay. What's the difference between these two concepts? When the Torah says that if Reuven has a cheskas tara, and now we have a suffix that maybe Reuven contracted tumah, the chazaka tells me no, status quo, he remains tahor. How do we understand that? The first way of understanding it is the birur. Birur means the Torah says that there are various indicators. That's what I would call birur. Birur means like circumstantial evidence. And in Hilchas Birur, what's being said here is that although it seems that there's a good chance that Reuven contracted tumah, he went down the wrong path, if you follow what I mean, but nevertheless, we don't have that certainty. And Chazaka tells me that our assumption is, until proven guilty, he's innocent, he's tar. The other way of learning it is differently. It's Kiyu. Kiyu means that, to take a step backwards and ask you a general question, well, who or what determines whether someone is tar or tame? A man is ma'il al ames, okay? He comes in contact with a dead body. Who says he becomes tameh? Steve, you said it? I said it? Who said it? The Torah said it, right? So the Torah has a reality of its own. And the Torah is going to determine under what circumstances you contract tumah and what circumstances you don't. The Chazaka tells me that he did not contract tumah. That's not a law of Birur, that's a law of Kiyu. Kiyu meaning that's the way the Torah constructs the law. And the Torah constructs the law of Tumah, that under these circumstances there is no Tumah. What's the difference between Birur and Kiyu? Shnei Shvilin. Why? Because in Shnei Shvilin, if I paskin for both of them, Reuven and Shimon, that they're both Tar, that doesn't jive, that doesn't reflect Birur, because in Hilchas Birur we know that one of them is Tamei. So if you're just looking for evidence, it's impossible to contradict that evidence and say they both are Tar. But if we're operating with the din of Kiyum, which means that the Torah is going to tell me who's Tamei and who's not, because the Torah has a big B on its sweatshirt, I'm the boss, and the Torah tells you whether you're Tamei or not. I'll give you an example. In Yiddish we call it a beispiel. A beispiel means an analogy. In order to marry a woman, you need two witnesses. Let's ask, are those two witnesses Birur or Kiyu? A man says, I married this woman. So she says, what are you talking about? So it's a bluff. The whole thing never happened. So he brings in two witnesses. That's called birur. But what happens if both he and she admit that there was a marriage? They went up to a roof and he gave her a ring and said, Aram Makudeshesli. She accepted the ring. Who was there to see it?
No one.
Just he and her. But there's no issue. I mean, they both agree. The answer is no. Here the Torah says we need witnesses l'kiyum hadavar. That's a formal legal requirement. Unless there were two witnesses, then the kedushin doesn't get off the ground. So in the first case where he claims that he married her, or she, whatever it goes in any direction, and she denies it, he denies it, then we bring in the edim as birur l'dov, to clarify who's telling the truth. And the two witnesses say we saw Reuven gave Leah this ring. That's the whole one. But in the second case, where both Reuven and Leah admit that there was kedushin, here we don't need a birur l'dov, but we need kiyum. The Torah says that in order to facilitate a marriage and create a kedushin, you need edus l'kiyum hadavar. Kiyum hadavar means they have to be there in order to make the marriage into a marriage. So now let's analyze the first Tosfos on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Hadinoka Taros. If we focus our attention on just these three words of Tosfos, we'll see that Tosfos is asking a very naive but a very fundamental question that we have to answer. This Mishnah of Shnei Shvilim tells us that Reuven and Shimon respectively touched Taros. Tosfos asks why. Why did the Mishnah feel compelled to add that piece to the story? It seems to be totally unnecessary. It's superfluous. V'lo kamar, why didn't he just say Adam Tahar? Just tell me that the man is Tahar. Right? If the man is Tahar, then he's Tahar. If the man is Tahar, then he's Tahar. Why do you have to tell me that he had contact with with Taros? He says the following, Mishum, Dilagavre, if we're only talking about the people, and we're not talking about what happened subsequently, that they had contact with Taros, is Afgal Demuk Minile Becheskes Tahorin. You might say the following, that technically we consider them Tahar, because each one comes in with his chazakah. I'm Tahar until I'm proven guilty. But nevertheless, Matzuchin Le Tvila Vazah. We're going to say the following. We're not going to allow them to be considered tahorim without undergoing a process of purification, which is called tevila and a mikveh and hazav of mei. Right, because we're talking about tumas mes here of mei chatos. Why? Because shlo yigu shneim b'truma. What happens if both Reuven and Shimon would touch the same truma? Rabosai, which kind of halacha is Tosfos applying here? Which kind of yardstick?
Kiyum.
No, Tosfos is applying birur because he's saying that if both Reuven and Shimon, again, as long as we're being mitar each one separately, fine, okay, that's okay. So you could say in Hilchos birur, that's fine. But if both of them came in contact with the same identical truma, then in Hilchos birur, we know that the truma became tameh. And we're dealing with a very severe iser if truma became tameh. If somebody eats that, it's a chiv misa b'dei shamayin. So Tosfos wants to know the following. We just finished saying that in the case of Shnei Shvilim, let's say, for example, if they came separately, or as Tosfos says, even if they came together, it's only Darabonah, but on a Darais level, even if they came together, we could even tire both of them. So I might come to the following conclusion, that okay, we can be mitayer both of them, but we're going to require that they both undergo purification and tefillah. Why? Because we have to be afraid that they might both come in contact with the same truma. And if they both come in contact with the same truma, then in Hilchos Birur, we know for sure that the truma is tamei. And therefore, the Mishnah went on and told me that asataros, that we didn't require any tefillah b'mikvah. There was no separate chumrah, stringent requirement of tefillah. We're going to allow them to go free, scot-free. And even if they touch taros, then the assumption is that the taros remained tar. In other words, the Mishnah adds these three words to switch tracks here from Hilchas Birur to Hilchas Kiyum HaDover. And the Torah says that in the case of a chazakah, we're able to establish that you are tar. Not that you're tar because you might be tar, but you are tar because the Torah says that we rely on chazakah, and therefore you're tar. If the Torah is saying, Birur, you know, maybe you're tar, and therefore we're going to allow you, based on chazakah, to assume that you're tar and you didn't go on the road that had the mess, then if both of them, Reuven and Shimon, would come in contact with the same truma, we would have to be metami the truma, because the birur is nice as long as I can separate Reuven from Shimon. But no one would allow me to separate Reuven from Shimon if both of them came in contact with the same truma. And he says, Mishum de legavri, afagav de mukmini le becheskes tahorim. If we're going to assume, when I use the word assume, I mean birur, that matzrichelu tefillah, we should still require tefillah nazah, because we really have to be nervous about the following scenario. Shelo yigu shneim v'truma, deyaz ha-truma tmeya v'adoyis, and hilchas birur, for sure the truma is tmeya. And therefore, hochel, if somebody could go ahead and eat this truma, let's say a kohen would eat the truma, is b'misa, because he's eating truma tmeya. Or for example, nagu shneim bi'echad, let's say Reuven and Shimon both touched Levi. Now Levi goes into the Mikdash, he be chayev for bias mikdash b'tumah, because both Reuven and Shimon came in contact with Levi. So therefore, Tosa says, it's not enough to tell me that each one is considered tar. Because if each one is considered tar, then we're going to assume that he's tar, but he might be tameh. And Hilchas Birur, we have a right to say that he's tar. But that Hilchas Birur allows me to say he's tar as long as I'm not involved in a vadai, in a certain situation of tuma, namely if they both came in contact with the same truma, or if they both came in contact with the same individual. Says Tosis, therefore the Mishnah had to go ahead and add these three words. I'm sorry, two words. V'asataros. V'asataros means that it's fine. We can allow him to eat truma, if he's a kohen, or to contact, have a contact with truma, and let the kohen then eat the truma. And we're not going to assume that we should require tefillah, because tomorrow they're both going to come in contact with the same truma. So here, Rabbi, I was thinking, what happens in the following case? In the laws of testimony, there's something very famous. It's called trade or trade. Now, it's a little tricky here, so I'm going to try to clarify this. Trey Trey is not the case of Hazoma. Hazoma means when the second pair of Edom say to the first pair of Edom, you couldn't have been there to see the crime because you were with us elsewhere. That's called Imanu Yisam. That's not Trey Trey. Trey Trey says that each pair of Edom says we were there at the so-called time of the halva, of the loan, and the loan didn't take place. So two Edom say we were there and the loan took place. Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and two Edom say no. So there's a head-on collision between these two witnesses. There's no way of reconciling. It means that one of these two pairs, perjured themselves. Okay. Now, what do we do with each of these two pairs of Edom? The answer is each pair of Edom has a cheskas kashrus. So therefore, the Gemara says the following: Zubab if neatzma either zubab if neatzmi. Henceforth, each one of these pairs could testify in another case. And if somebody will say, well, wait a minute, in the first case they purged themselves, we're going to say, no, cheskes kashrus, it was trey v'trey. But if one witness from one group comes together to testify with another witness from the other group, we have to throw it out. Because then for sure we know one of them is possible. What's that called, Rabbi? Say, kiyum or biru?
Biru.
So you see, it's very interesting. With regard to Tumah Vitara, Tosus thought it was Birur, and then he changed his mind, and he established that it's Hilchas Kiyum. And therefore, when we say that this person is Tar, until we know otherwise, and we Uki Gavra Cheskas Tara, that becomes a Vadai situation. The Torah has determined that he's Tar. Don't ask me about whether or not he came in contact with the dead, which is a 50% chance. The Torah says, I'm the boss. I got the big B. And I say that he's Tar. That's called Kiyum. But we cannot take this sugya as our paradigm and extrapolate that in all cases we're going to apply the principle of Kiyum in Chazokas. It doesn't mean that because Chazokas in Tara, Cheskes Tara, establishes a Kiyum, and any suffering that you have on his status as Tar, Cheskes Tara, is now going to be completely dismissed, and we're going to establish that he's Tar, and we don't care what he does afterwards, we're not going to require Tefillah and Azar, he can have a contact with Trumas and Taros. But in other Chazokas, Chazokah works as a Bir. And if Chazokah works on a Bir, then once I get to the point when there's an absolute certainty against the Chazokah, the Bir falls off. So if I take one aid from each of these two ketos and I combine them, I know that one of them is possible, I can no longer rely on the aid. So the Cheskes Kashrus in Eidus is not like the Cheskes Tara, and it's not going to establish that he's a Vadai kosher. We're going to say he's kosher, we're going to treat him as such, as long as there's no contradiction. So if Zubav if they ask me, either Zubav if they ask the Gemara in Cheskes Avad. So let's say, for example, a woman has a Cheskes Tara, and then she sees Dam. And we're not sure if this Dam is Dam Nida, Minamokar, or if it's a Pishpush, maybe she sat on something, and so forth, the blood comes from the heavens. It's not her blood. So in such a case, we're going to say Uki Gavra B'Cheskes Tara. Now, what would be if she came in contact with Truma? In such a case, I would say that the Truma still remains Truma Tahora. And I can apply that based on the Cheskes Tara that tells me there's not even a suffix on this Truma because of Hilchas Kiyum Adov. Now, I think we should combine the two Tosfos in, because once I come to the conclusion that the bottom line of the first Tosfos is Hilchas Kiyum Adovar, then therefore I'm going to apply that Hilchas Kiyum Adovar even if both Reuven and Shimon came in to Shoel B'yachad B'vasachas. Why? Again, this is all on a deraisa level. We're not worried about the spectator at this point. Because even if they came from Asachas, each one comes in with his Cheskes Tara. And therefore, even though the Mora Hora is going to have to issue a verdict in which they're both Tar, and in Hilchas Bira, that's impossible. They can't both be Tar. But nevertheless, since each one has his own Cheskes Tara, I can apply the rule of Kiyum Adover, and therefore the Hora could be on both of them, that each one is Tar. And you'll ask me, well, what do you mean? Come on, that's a joke. It can't be so that each one is Tar. And the answer is that God is the big boss. And he said that there's a din of Cheskes Tara. And until you know certainly that he's Tameh, he's Tar. And those are the rules of the game. And therefore I can paskin for both of them in Vasachas that they're Tahorim. Now again, Rabbi Yossi is the one who says no. Even if they come with Zach or Zach, the paskin on the goof of the Uvda, on the Shail itself, and the suffix was, is there Tumah? And the answer is, it's got to be Vadei Tumah. That blows up the whole operation of Cheskes Tara. But in Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference, he's operating with the Cheskes Tara, and he's not interested in the goof of the Uvda, the suffix itself, and the reality of the suffix. He's interested in each Gavra who comes with his own personal Chazaka. Then Tosfos says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, on a Doraisa level, even if they came in together, which means that the Hora, by definition, is a mistaken Hora, we're not interested in the Mitzvahs. We're not interested in Biru. We're interested in Kiyum Ladov. So I really believe that these two Tosfos should be taken as one whole. Now, how does this all impact on our friendly Achbar, who's coming into the house, and we don't know which house he went into, but he's carrying chometz? Now, first of all, Tosis raises what's called Svek Sveka. Even if I would assume, which I don't know, that the Achbar went into my house, maybe the Achbar ate up the chometz. So I have a Svek Sveka, you have a double suffix. First of all, I don't know if the Achbar went into my house, maybe he went into your house. And even if he went into my house, maybe he ate up the chometz. So Tosis says that the chometz is a large piece of chometz. And he couldn't have possibly consumed it, given the amount of time that we have since we saw him going into one of these two houses. It means that according to Tosfos Halacha Lemaisa, if the chametz and the piece of bread that he's carrying is a small, limited piece of bread, we have a svek sveka. Number one, we don't know if he went in. And number two, even if he went in, we don't know if the chametz still exists. We have rights to assume, or at least a possibility, that he ate up the chametz. And all this is up until Rav. So we don't have too much time, but let's see if we can get to the finish line. It's just a few lines of Gemara. Omar Rava, V'item Rav Yochanan. Bevas achas divrei akol tmeim. And Tosfos would assume that this is the Rabbanan. If they came in together, the onlooker is going to go absolutely ballistic if you tell me that they're both Tahorim, because it's impossible. So therefore, they're going to have to be calmed down. And how do we calm them down? We're going to have to say that each one is Tamei. They're both Tmeim. But Zechar Zeh, if each one came in separately, we thought that Rabbi Yossi holds in that case, we have to be Metami both of them. Says Rabbi the name of Rabbi Yochanan, no. Divrei Akol, Tahorim. Even Rabbi Yossi would agree that we could be Metair both of them. And why is that so? Because I can give a Horah for Reuven separately and a Horah for Shimon independently. And each one has his own Cheskes Tara. No Nechleku. So where is the Machlokas between Chachomim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Beva li shoel olav yal chaver. Shimon is sleeping in his bed. So Reuven comes in front of the Chacham and he tells the whole story and he says, look, I'm asking on my own behalf and also on behalf of Shimon. Right now he's not here. But if he was here, he would certainly want to know if he has to do another bedikah. Here's where we have machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi medami leila basachas. Rabbi Yossi says that once, even if they're both not there, once the question was asked about both of them, in other words, Reuven is asking on behalf of Shimon in absentia, then the horah is going to be on both of them. And we said before that everybody agrees, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, that if the horah is on both of them, that was the case of Asachas, we have to be metami both of them. Rabbi Yehuda medami le lezachar zeh. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says that this is similar to zachar zeh. Why? Because I'm going to paskin for each individual. The fact that he's asking on behalf of his friend, that doesn't change the nature of the horah. The horah and the verdict is on each individual separately. And Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda medami lezachar zeh, hoil v'ein kan shoel ela echad. If there's only one person who's asking the question, meshivin lo, we can give him a horah, a response, tar ato. Sharei sofek biyahu. Because we don't know if he went into a place of tumah. Maybe he went down the path that doesn't have tumah. Umi atzmo yavin, he can derive the logical conclusion, sha'af chaveru kamo, that there's no difference between him and his friend Shimon who's sleeping in bed. And if we retire him, then we retire Shimon by definition as well, because they're both equal. And in both cases, it's a suffix bia. We don't know if they went into a place of tumah. If they both come in front of the Chacham, say Rashi asks a technical question, they're not asking together, they're both there, but each one has to separate his question. The answer is there's something called Tochidei Dibur. They both asked the question within a very short period of time. It's as if they simultaneously asked that question. Now you have no choice, but you're compelled to answer both of them together. And therefore you cannot be metame, you cannot be metire them, you have to be metame them. So that's the case of both Vasachas. And everybody agrees, whether it's Rabbi Yossi or even Rabbi Yehuda, then in this case they're both Tmeim. The machlokus is going to be if Reuven shows up and he asks the question on behalf of Shimon, and the answer is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, hold the ain kanel shoel echad, since there's only one shoel, then the horah is going to be a shoe that fits his foot and only his foot. Let the logical conclusions be derived as far as Shimon is concerned, but there was no horah for Shimon because he never came to ask the question. Says Rashi, v'gabei batim nami. Now we have two batim. We don't know if the achbar went into bias number one or bias number two. In bo lishol zeli atzmo v'zebif ne'atzmo. If the owner of one house came separately, amrinu l'kol echa, we can say to each one of them, i'ata tzarech b'livdok, you don't have to do a bedika. And now Rashi pulls the rabbit out of his hat. He says, how can we do that? It's a doraisa shaila. Keva de bedikas chametz de rabbanan, meaning he already did bittel, is talinan lekula v'amrinan sveiko mutar. But ibevas achas bo shneim tzrichim bedik. So Rashi basically takes the analogy here to its logical conclusion. Just like in the case of shnei shvilin, if they came separately, we could be mitayer both each one of them. That's even according to Rabbi Yehuda. I'm sorry, even according to Rabbi Yossi. So too in the case of Batim, if each one came separately, we can tell both of them go home. There's no need to do a repeat bedika. If they came together, then we have to require that they both do bedika. Says Rashi, you should know that this makes sense if we're dealing with bedika derabbana, meaning he already did bittul. If it was bedika doraisa, then we have no right to use a kula here and say that, you know, the achbar didn't go into this house, it went into this house, it didn't go to this house, it went to that house, when it's a real suffik doraisa, and therefore we'd have to paskin suffik doraisa l'chul. Okay then, so in Mirtz Hashem we'll continue tomorrow, and let's make a note of where we got up to. We're going to talk about the famous sugya bika. That's also a world-class sugya. Every sugya that we're learning in this case is like, you know, world-class. I mean, these are really famous, because the rules of psak will very much be dependent upon all the different scenarios that we're studying. Okay, then, is everybody okay? Everyone's good? Yeah, questions?
Are you giving Tosafot's first one, we should explain second.
Right.
Right. So you said if it was both touched the same food, right, then it's birur, because the reality is that one of them is not, and therefore touching the same food.
Right. Right. Right.
But then I got lost when you said, but if they each touched their own separate food, I didn't follow.
No, so the Mishnah went ahead and said that we're going to allow each one to go ahead and pick up taros,
right,
and come in contact with it, and we're not going to require a tevila. We're not going to require any sort of process of purification.
Okay.
Now, how is that possible? Tomorrow, maybe both of them will touch the same truma. We can't allow. You know, you're opening up a Pandora's box here, because you're exonerating each one from a tara, a requirement of tara. It means that down the line, maybe they'll both touch the same truma. We can't, you know, we're dealing with a chiv misa. You know, you can't play around with such a game. You know, it's a very hot piece of coal that you're taking in your hands.
Right. So it's not just a question of this piece of food. It's a question of, because
right,
one of them is definitely tamet.
Right.
Okay. So in that case, you're using the kinu.
Correct. And we say they're both tar. That's the paradox. So they're both tar. Why? Because God is wearing the big B on his sweatshirt. He's going to tell you who's tummy and who's tar. Do you follow me? That's called kiyum.
I'm following, but I'm not.
It's like in the case of kedushin. They both admit that there was a kedushin. Who cares? Why do I need aidim? The answer is there's something called aidis l'kiyum. The Torah designed marriage in such a way that it can only be effectuated with two aidim.
So that I understood. So in this case, one. Okay.
And the Torah is saying that you can only contract tumah if there was a vada, if we know for sure you contract the tumah.
Ah.
And I'm the boss. I'm going to say who's tavi and who's tar.
Ah, so since it's
that's called kiyum.
Since it's a suffix and not a vadai.
Therefore, he's not tavi.
Ah, okay.
And if he's not tavi, then all the repercussions thereof. You know, all the pieces of the puzzle fit in.